This is the Parents in Sport podcast. Amazing guests, honest conversations, topics that matter.
Welcome to season four of the Parents in Sport podcast. I'm your host, Gordon McClelland, and I'm delighted to be joined today by former NFL coach, captain of the GB Women's American football team, and broadcaster for Sky Sports and Talk Sport, Phoebe Schachter. Phoebe, thank you for joining us on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be able to talk to you finally. I know it's something we've had in the works for ages, so I'm excited this day is finally here.
Well, you're not as excited as I am. As I alluded to before we spoke, obviously we're big NFL fans in our house, and obviously you beam into our sitting room most Sunday evenings. So no doubt, as I said, my children will be complaining at me that I'm name dropping again and that I know Phoebe Schachter and I've had a chat with her, which I'm sure will come out most Sundays during the course of next season. But for those of our listeners who don't know quite as much about you, can you just give them a little bit more about your background and your story and your amazing career to date, which over the last couple of years just seems to be on this huge upward trajectory?
Yes, it has definitely been a roller coaster, that's for sure. I guess it all kind of started 10 years ago now when I moved to the UK. I originally moved up to the Northwest in like the Manchester area to work with horses. That's always been my passion and really what I thought I would do forever. And literally a month after moving, I saw an ad on social media for American football for a team, a women's team near me. And I think when you're out of your comfort zone, you're so much more willing to take risks. And so for me, I just went for it, tried out for this team, even though I'd never played contact sport before. And it was by far the best decision I ever made. Because now, you know, I look back, I'm still playing and it's given me, you know, the social setting that I was looking for, a bit of that American culture as well. It's just been incredible. And so essentially I thought I couldn't play forever despite being 33 and still playing. And so I got into coaching and started with the youth because for me, that was the best way to build my confidence. You know, I was still in a brand new sport. I didn't really watch any sort of NFL or American football when I lived in the States. So I was able to work with the youth and share my knowledge and experiences and then slowly build up to adult and eventually got to a point where the NFL were hosting things called careers forums specifically for women, which is still ongoing to this day, which, you know, I feel very, very proud to say that, I think 7 years in. And at that, we spoke about something called the Bill Walsh Diversity Fellowship. Now, this essentially is an internship where pretty much any minority can apply to try and do an OTAs or training camp with an NFL team. So for me, I chose my five teams. I heard back from three of them, which were no's, and it was between the Atlanta Falcons and the Buffalo Bills. Now, at the time, Scott Pioli was and still is my really close mentor and friend, and he was with the Falcons at that time. And I was like pretty much about to say yes to them when I got this email from Coach McDermott saying to call him. And that is a moment I'll never forget because I left my meeting with Scott Pioli, jump on a phone call with Coach McDermott, and he says, you know, are you having any conversations with any other teams? And I said, yes, I want to be really transparent. I'm speaking with Scott and the Falcons, and he took a second and he just kind of went, well, tell Scott, thank you, but you're going to be a Bill now. And that was it. And, you know, I still get goosebumps from that moment today. And that kind of was it, right? I got right into my first training camp in 2017 with the Bills and continued my volunteering at different universities and then back again 2018 with the Bills through to 2019. And it's just kind of, it's been madness, absolute madness.
Yeah, I mean, just incredible. And I didn't know that. I thought you were just a big Buffalo Bills fan, perhaps from your childhood. But of course, it had nothing to do with that, which just shows you that we never quite understand the backstory for everything.
Yeah. And, you know, to be honest, it was funny because obviously in the East, you're in the same division as the Patriots. Now I'm from New England in the States. My mom's British, so she's got dual citizenship. She's obviously British citizen. I've got dual citizenship. So even if I did root for a team, it kind of had to be the Patriots. But once you play the Patriots, when I was at Buffalo, we played the Patriots home and away. You just think, I can't like you. I just can't like you as a team.
Yeah, I mean, some of those rivalries are just incredible, aren't they? What was it? I mean, working as a coach, over there in the NFL for a little bit, what was that actually like? Because I'm guessing that, not necessarily in Buffalo, but there'll be challenges being a female in what is a heavily male orientated sport as it has been. I mean, how did you find it? What was it like going in? I mean, you must have been hugely nervous, were you? And how were people with you?
I was nervous because I wanted to add value, right? I didn't want to just be there to be there. I wanted to make sure that I was putting my best foot forwards all the time. I think the excitement way outshone the nervousness. I remember our D-line coach was like, "Do you ever stop smiling?" I was like, "No, this is amazing. Like, why would I not, be over the moon to be here?" I think there's a way, ultimately, any organization or family or anything all is formed around trust. And for me, that trust comes through vulnerability. And so one of the things I think that really helped me in my journey was just being humble and saying when I didn't know something. I didn't pretend to have the answers to things I didn't know, but I always said, "Hey, but I will find out for you. If I don't have these answers, I will sort that." And that really helped me build relationships with the players, with the coaches. And, I think I look at that whole experience and it really comes down to myself, right? That kind of imposter syndrome. There was no one else making me feel a way about it, but you do doubt yourself. And, at that time we were losing in Buffalo, so that's never easy. But you have these conversations and I think you have to just bring it back to, okay, maybe somebody opened a door for you, right? We all in life got places through the help of someone else. No one's ever solely done it on themselves. So someone might have opened that door for you, but then it's on you to earn your right through that door, to continue to be asked back, to continue to give yourself a space. And so I think having that belief in yourself and knowing what value you bring to a team are really, or any organization are really important.
Oh yeah, I mean, I live with imposter syndrome all the time. I mean, I talk to thousands of parents all over the world, and it's like, well, I'm the biggest imposter because who am I to talk to you about how you sort of sports parent your kids? And I think that I think everybody's beginning to realize now that people are just really human and say, actually, do you know what? I don't actually know that. Or in my case, do you know what? I make loads of mistakes with my sports parenting every month, and here are just some of them, despite living and breathing this. And then I think people just feel a whole heap better. They just feel like they can connect and they can relate to things. And then I think we've got a chance then.
Completely agree, and I think that's so key what you said there. You own your mistakes and, hey, this is what I've done, this is how I've learned from it, this is how I can share. I think at the end of the day, we want to be in a world or society where things feel achievable. And for me, like I say it to anybody, I'm just a normal person. I happen to make some certain specific decisions, but I'm like you. I'm like so and so, whoever that may be. Everyone has the ability to do this. It's just what you choose to put your mind to.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you say, we just hope that we all get an opportunity at something at some point, and then it's up to us to try and take it. I mean, your, I guess, sporting journey, yeah, I'd say your playing journey, let's say, is really quite bizarre, isn't it? Because when you're starting to pick up that at 22, so tell me about sort of Phoebe growing up. I mean, did you play lots of other sports back then before obviously you then went and did, American football in the UK?
Yeah, and I think in the States, you're kind of born into sports. You literally from a young age are told to run or pick up a baseball bat or whatever it looks like. So, I always did. I did cross country. I did lacrosse. That tended to be that sport that I focused in on more later in life. Basketball, softball, literally everything. I'd say my biggest sport by far was horses. Like that was something from 4 years old, I've been riding. And I think that's probably the sport, I guess you could say, that really shaped my life the most, because you learn responsibility from such a young age. You learn discipline. There's a lot to do with respect and, you know, body language and all things that really, you know, even that ultimate line, right? You fall off, you get right back on again. Like the amount of times that I've fallen off in my life and I'm like, all right, here we go. You know, but those literally do apply to real life scenarios.
Yeah, I, and you know, all those, it's amazing. The more people we talk to on this show, the lessons that we can learn from sport, as long as we're actually looking for them. I mean, you've just said there, you know, you have to be responsible with a horse. You have to be disciplined with everything that you do. There's the respect things. There's all the things around body language, and then those amazing lessons about how if we're struggling and it's a challenge and we fail or we're disappointed or we get thrown off, that we're able to find ways of bouncing back and going again. And I think the big challenge, I think, for me seeing this, is that we all know that sport can provide these amazing opportunities, or this amazing vehicle, or still one of the safest vehicles today in many ways, but only if we're not missing it as we're going along, only if we're not missing these bits and getting too caught up with outcomes, which I know can be a particular challenge in the States as well, with people, you know, after college scholarships and all the perks and benefits that go with that. What do you think of that?
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, because that whole conversation around the NIL, so name, image, likeness, that's kind of propped up in the past year and a bit now. You know, that really changes the face of sport in a lot of ways, especially for younger people, because no longer is sport just being played for, you know, enjoyment and competitive, you know, a bit of competitiveness, health and well-being. You know, there's actual, you know, a potential gold pot at the end of it. And I found it even looking at the NFL draft, which we recently just had, you know, some athletes who would have in the past, you know, perhaps graduated early in order to come to the NFL. Well, they don't have to do that, because they're making more money in college now than potentially they would make, you know, if they were drafted by the NFL. But I think there's still, you know, I think there's two worlds, right? Community, and then you've got elite. And yes, there's always going to be that elite level of competitors who really want to be getting to the next level. But I think so much of our focus has to be on community, because those are the people that really run the sport. They're the ones that every day are putting in the time and the effort and the energy, and, you know, they truly love it for the sake of loving it. You know, whether it's a Sunday league or, you know, a kids football league, whatever that looks like, girls netball, like, you're doing it because it makes you feel good. And you're doing it because, you know, whether for mental health reasons or, you know, physical health reasons, or just to have a community, those are the organizations that I really want to, like, put all my time and energy behind.
Yeah. I mean, look, the stuff close to home, having role models close to home, the things around community are really, really important. And I think we're battling a bit, aren't we, trying to pull back maybe the last 20, 30 years in people setting off in sport with the sort of end goal or the only success being, well, did I make it as a pro, or did I get to college, and did I do this? And actually, we need to sort of rewind a bit and start that again and do all of the reasons for doing the sport. And then actually, hopefully, if you are good enough and you get to the right stage and you whatever, and you want to continue to push yourself and develop, that then those doors open as well.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And it takes people like yourself and having these conversations to really continue to push that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, look, and I do think people are beginning to get more and more behind that. I do think it's important also to say that, you know, I'm sure a bit like yourself, you know, I'm not one of those happy clappy people who doesn't value winning and competition. I'm the most competitive person in the world, and so are my two kids who are both involved in performance sport. And this isn't about being all sorts of deck chairs and ice creams and the world's a happy place. That isn't what it is. It's just reframing it so we give young people the best chance to perhaps, you know, excel in their sport, but also fundamentally pick up all these amazing benefits from being involved. And you talked about one in particular, which we know is important for young girls, was that your NFL bits over here gave you that connection thing that you were looking for. And that's huge for young girls. We know that if we want them to stay in sport.
Yeah, big time. I mean, there's so many studies out now about kind of that 13 to 16 year old girl dropping out of sports for multiple reasons, but connection is a big part of it. You know, if you don't feel comfortable or you have a, you know, some sort of like social element to your sport, you may not want to keep going. Like, what's pulling you, unless you're so in love with the sport that you want to go for that, which a lot of times they aren't. You know, they go because their friends are there and they have a great time and a good laugh. You know, there's also like the body conscious element of things where, you know, you don't know what to do with your body at that age. What's the appropriate clothing to wear? What sports bra should I wear? You know, like the amount of times I've been to primary age girls sessions and they're just kind of holding themselves and running because they just don't have the appropriate attire on, you know, for their shape and size. And I think those are all like educational pieces that, you know, yes, as adults, we're starting to feel more comfortable about having these conversations. But at the young age, the age that really, really matters, and the age that, you know, girls are literally dropping out of sport, we need more conversations at that level, you know, and not just conversations with the young athletes, conversations with their coaches as well. You know, even all those great conversations about time of month and all the hormone changes, you know, that all plays a really big role into creating a really great environment for these young athletes.
Yeah, and look, I'll be the first to admit, you know, with a daughter myself, I think for a lot of dads as well, it's a really uncomfortable, you know, thing to get over. But actually, I'm really pleased that I have embraced it, and I'm really pleased that there's more information out there, because even though she may not always want to talk about it, at least I have an awareness. And you know, the more and more you work in the field or you're out there, you sort of think, actually, we're probably not always going to be able to tell people what to do, because telling adults what to do doesn't always go down particularly well. But actually, if we know a bit more and we're a lot more self-aware, it's then on us to make better choices if we actually know it. And I think a lot of those topics you're talking about, they were just hidden away for so long and nobody ever sort of broached them.
Yeah, precisely. And now, you know, now we've got girls who have so many female role models, you know, whether it's the Lionesses or the Red Roses or whomever. So they see themselves in these roles and they are more inclined to get into the sport because there's people that look like them doing that sport. So, you know, we want more girls to be participating in any role, whether it's playing, coaching, officiating. Like, there's so many routes to get involved. And, you know, it kind of circles back to what you were saying earlier, you know, just those life lessons, the confidence, how empowered you feel by being someone who plays sport or is involved with it. You know, I was reading something the other day about how like all these top women in like Fortune 500 companies all played sport. You know, there wasn't one of them that didn't play sport as a child. So you think how key these lessons that these young people are going through now will then work into their life later in life.
Yeah, I mean, that must have been a fascinating article, and it does show that, like, I think people who aren't in sport often say, yeah, but there's lots of other things that you can do to develop those skills. And I don't think anybody doubts that, of course there is, but it does allow you to throw an awful lot of those key character and life skills under one umbrella in one environment if, as I said earlier, coaches are valuing it, parents are valuing it. But I think more importantly as well, I think we need to make the connection for the children. You know, when you speak to athletes, you know, they need to understand the meaning of these words, like, you know, resilience. You know, what does commitment look like? What does it mean to be more self-organized? You know, how do I communicate well? And actually, I think a lot of them, again, just probably by the nature of some of the environments they're in, the looking at outcomes and success is almost perfectionism that doesn't exist, or their exam grades. And actually, no, actually, the success is you understanding what gives you the best chance of achieving those outcomes. And it's all of those building blocks. But I think children need just as much help with that as almost like the adults do around it.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that it's I think it's really tough on young people nowadays. You know, we look back to when you and I were kids and we didn't have the same pressures that these young people do. We don't have, you know, the idea of someone's filming everything that you're doing and evaluating it. And, you know, if you make a fool of yourself on, you know, the pitch, someone might upload that, you know, so there's all these external pressures that I know I personally have never had to deal with, really. You know, yeah, I might make a fool of myself now playing, but you kind of are older and you're more able to manage the way you feel. But yeah, I think the young people do need to experience more of that understanding of the building blocks and how key they are. But a lot of that just comes through repetition, hearing it from different people as well. You know, I'm sure, Gordon, you could tell your daughter to do something a million times, but one time she hears it from someone else or someone she looks up to, and you're like, I've been saying that all along.
Yeah, oh, that's all the time. That's all the time. I try to offer bits of worldly wisdom, do it all the nice ways, and then she'll say, "Oh, somebody's just come and one of my coaches has just told me that." And I'm like, "I've been saying that for years. That is exactly what I've been talking about." But of course, because it's not, you know, somebody else that's different to dad. It's good, and you know, we talked about, you know, connection for young girls. And you know, I'll never forget the story of my daughter. So my daughter followed my son. So she'd sort of been pulled around quite a bit, and it's benefited her hugely because she's probably better than he is at the sports that they play, even though she's a couple of years behind. But I think she'd sort of been part of those early sporting experiences. And I'll never forget when we were talking about you sort of owning mistakes, and I'll never forget getting into the car with her, and I said, "Right, Pippa, Daddy's really looking forward to taking you to sport today." And there was this sort of weird, slightly weird silence. And she said, "Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to that as well, Daddy. Thank you." And she said, "But there's going to be no car bossing," was how she described it. Well, my heart sunk because I'm thinking, oh my goodness, you've just been sat in the car as you've listened to me talk to my son. Admittedly, we've got a whole heap better, me and my son, in the last 3 or 4 years, having learned from it. She said that, and then she said, and this was interesting, she said, "I know you know something about sport, so I'm happy to have a few tips, but you're gonna do it nicely." And it was probably the best thing that I ever heard, because my support of her in terms of meeting her needs, whether that's a female thing or an individual thing, has been so much better because she will listen to feedback. She does want help and support, but actually picking the right moment and doing it in a way that is right for her. And actually, in her case, it's been well away from her brother or her mum, for example, that she's happy if it's just me and her and nobody else can hear it. The moment other people are maybe around it, she would switch off and thing. And you've almost, again, it's self-awareness, isn't it? Almost, you've got to work to your own children or work to the people you're coaching to understand what makes them tick.
And everybody is so different. The way that they learn, the way they take feedback, the way that, you know, they can self-reflect. Everyone is so unique in how we all process that. And I think it's really interesting. I speak to a bunch of different coaches, and especially in our like football world, for example, over here in the UK, you know what, we've got a lot of, because the women's game is still quite new, we've got a lot of coaches who come from the men's game and transfer to the women's game. And it's a bit of a learning curve a lot of times for these guys because, you know, you can't necessarily speak to the girls the same way you would do the boys. And it's not because we're not coachable. It's because, you know, first off, we ask why all the time. We want to know and understand and get the whole picture. Whereas, you know, to a guy, you could say, hey, go run this fade route or run the go route. And they'd be like, yeah, okay. If you say that to a girl, they'd be like, why? What are we doing? You know, we want to understand the big picture. So I think it's a good thing because it makes you be really sure within yourself that when you're coaching, whatever you're coaching, you know, you can give your reason for why it applies, how it applies, where we would use it. And I think it makes you a better coach. I think it also makes you more empathetic as well in terms of, you have to be able to read body language and, you know, really know each player as an individual because every single one is so uniquely different.
Yeah, and you can't get away with just simply copying and pasting, which is what we see in the youth sports space, isn't it? Particularly, I mean, parents and some coaches do this where they just copy and paste something from the adult form and expect it to work in another environment, and it just doesn't.
No, exactly.
You know. Now, as you were growing up, obviously, this is the Parents in Sport podcast. What were your parents like for you, without throwing them under the bus, because we've had a few that have been thrown under the bus in a variety of things that we've done. How were they with you when you were growing up around your sport? Do you remember much?
I would say, you know, with horses, that was probably, you know, where I spent 90% of my time that wasn't at the house or in school. So I think, you know, a lot of just being around a yard was what taught me so much. I'd say from, I guess, another. I've always had people that are supportive. My mom is not sporty at all. My dad was into sports. And so, you know, but I mean, I moved out at a really young age and I lived with families who were always, you know, very diligent workers. Everything was outdoorsy, like you just worked and you were, you know, always worked as one. So I'd say from that perspective, like there were really great lessons through them. But I would say most of my experience is really through just being at the yard and having, you know, that as my life experience. I'd say now my mom came to a game, an American football game we had here versus Sweden. So, I mean, she has no idea what's happening, but, you know, she came. So that's a good start.
Yeah, oh, that's such a lovely story, isn't it? That's really cool. That is a really cool story.
Yeah.
I think, you know, that bit you've said there, there's this big debate about whether or not it's a good thing that your parents know anything about sport or actually know quite a lot. And you hear so many mixed stories where some actually, I'm just pleased that they know nothing. So that then they play completely the role of parent.
Yeah.
But then it's not as straightforward as that, because there's some people whose parents, if they get their approach right with their kid, can add so much value that other people who wouldn't maybe didn't. Now, in your case, it worked the other way. But that would be an interesting one in the NFL world, wouldn't it? Who's
yeah, I mean,
you know, how many have we got playing at the moment whose families played, or how many do you think we've got that didn't play?
Tons. Look at how many brothers are playing in the NFL, you know, the Watts, the Edmonds, the Diggs, the, you know, the list kind of goes on. And then you've got Jalen Hurts, his, you know, they were just in a Super Bowl. His dad is a coach, you know, and kind of raised them. Amon-Ra St. Brown, Equanimeous St. Brown, their dad was big into it. So, you know, there's a lot of people in the NFL who do have that. It's funny. I instantly go to thinking of youth sports because I work with NFL Flag in the States quite a lot and host massive, massive tournaments, you know, thousands and thousands of kids. And I think about those tournaments compared to the ones we have here in the UK. And the biggest thing I would say is the parents. The parents all are thinking they are their kids' coaches, to the point where, like, you almost have to have a barrier between the parents and the players, because, you know, they're just so intense. Whereas here, because a lot of the parents aren't necessarily as clued up on the sport, they're just there to celebrate, clap, and really be excited for their kids, which I really do love. I love that piece of it. And I get what you're saying, because it's a unique situation, whereas you almost are getting like extra time in. And I think there's a really big benefit to if you do have parents who are coaches, but they would need to be parents who are coaches that when they go to their kid's game, they're there as a parent. And I think that's the difference, understanding what your role is at certain times.
Yeah, and look, parents need a huge amount of support around that. That's all our work. You know, the whole thing and the understanding of us being the ultimate role models of the type of support that, you know, elite athletes need and the behaviours that go around that. But you wouldn't know unless you were talking about it. There's no reason for you to know. You would just get pulled along by, oh, well, this must just be what we do in sport, you just copy and conform to what everybody else is doing. So, I mean, it's a privilege to try and, you know, have a positive impact in, I guess, in that space. Based on what you sort of know as a female athlete in your world of coaching, what sort of advice, what's your best bits of advice for parents raising sort of young daughters, or even dads in particular? What do we need to be really thinking of that are maybe different from, you know, raising sons? I mean, you alluded to the one from the coaching perspective where we can just tell our sons, oh, just get on with that. And actually the reality is our daughters want to know, well, why are we doing that? And actually when you tell them, oh yeah, yeah, no, I'm up for that. But they need there's quite a few bits like that, isn't there?
There are, definitely. And I think it's a really interesting conversation and good question in terms of, you know, you look back to literally the way that boys and girls are treated differently. I think part of it is us as adults, you know, to be able to treat them as equally as possible, in the sense of, as the most like basic example, you know, a boy falls up and you're like, come on, you're good, get on with it. A girl falls down, sorry, and we all kind of coddle them. You know, those are things that people are doing from a young age that start to kind of shrink the world, I'd say, of a young female, because you think, oh, well, if this happens, then I can be upset and it's okay. And, you know, whereas boys, we teach them to be tougher all the time. I think that finding that healthy mix between the two is a nice way. And it's, you know, it's, again, I was listening to another kind of like TED Talk thing, and it was talking about the way that we discuss women's sports. You know, we're like, oh, you know, so-and-so is this great mom, or is also, you know, doing all this with charity. And we almost put what that athlete does off the field as priority over what they're doing on the field. So when we highlight women athletes, we almost talk about like these other features that create them, not the fact that they might be the top goal scorer of all time, or, you know, they're terrific at netball. And, you know, I think highlighting those accolades are just as important. You know, there's great male athletes out there that also have children, but we don't highlight the fact that, oh, he's a great dad. That doesn't change who they are on the pitch. So I think the way we talk about women's sports also needs to be highlighted in a different way.
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, that's great advice. Yeah, I think a lot of the time it's our conversations, and even at home with our daughters, you know, watching sport on the TV and picking those moments out, it'll make you smile. So I try all the things that you've tried, Phoebe, but my daughter, just not interested in watching the female versions.
Really?
not interested. If I put on women's football and put on the men's football wins every time. Same with the cricket, of which she does. Now, I won't bother with that. I'll go and watch the Indian Premier League and I'll watch the men's.
And really?
Yeah, yeah. Which is, I mean, again, everybody is going to be different, but it's a fascinating one, because, you know, where I try with that, and obviously you're trying to pull out, you know, role models that we've talked about. It's interesting how our kids respond. I mean, perhaps that might have been, but maybe that was what her early formative years were, when she was maybe 7 to 9 or 6 till 9, and maybe it was heavily male dominated. But then she wasn't interested back then. So I think it's just, you know, you keep having those conversations and you keep pointing them out. I think, I mean, we've talked about role models a lot, and I mean, you're an incredible role model, I think, for a lot of young women, you know, never mind our daughters. Well, we talk a lot about role models, and often it's easy to pick out role models who, perhaps, let's say, won a gold medal or perhaps broke a world record. But actually, there's some amazing role models out there who develop, you know, who have so much more than that. What do you think young girls are going to need to be like people like yourself in the sports industry, who have been successful as an athlete, done some coaching, but even now highly respected as a broadcaster? I mean, what you know, who are we looking at, and what are some of those skills, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think resiliency, absolutely. You have to, you know, not be afraid to fail and take chances. And perhaps for most of us, our whole lives, we've been taught that it's not okay to fail. But actually, you learn so much from, you know, failings, essentially. And I think just the ability to communicate, and that might be something we're slightly losing, you know, with the younger generation, just in terms of, you know, socially and with literally like iPads and iPhones and all, you know, all of that. But like that ability to communicate and connect with people is still at the core of everything that you do.
I'm gonna interject you there, not because of anything you've said, but I think it's a really important point. This communication thing, because it's something that's cropped up a lot recently. And I'm on a bit of a crusade because I saw a brain scan of a 19-year-old Canadian child who'd spent the last 10 years with their heads in devices. And it did not make for pretty reading at all. And my gut feeling when I saw it was, I want to go to number 10 here and ban devices till they're 18, which I know is totally unrealistic, but it was how I felt as a parent. And ever since, having gone out and about, and parents have been really good on this, and I've said, look, let's remember, devices are here, they're here to stay. We're obviously trying to support our kids to use them effectively and healthily. But when our children are still at home, we are still the adults. They are not our friends. And if we don't want them to have them in the bedrooms, if we want to have days, and I heard a great thing the other week, a 1995 day, they called them. And I know some sports having them. And I know some families have started to do it, where you're basically allowed to send, you're allowed to type on Word, and you're allowed to make a phone call, but that's it.
I love it.
which I thought was really cool. But my point is, I said to all these parents, when I mentioned the brain scan, I talked about devices and about not having them in our kids' room, and about when we have family meals, that you can take them off them, and that you can have days where you don't have it. I do feel really strongly that we can at least influence that. I'm not saying it's necessarily the most healthy way to do it, because you're not wanting a blanket ban, but we've still got some control. And I think sometimes for us as sports parents, it's too easy for us to say, there you go, that's going to occupy you, and step aside. But without realizing, it's things like that communication and connection that's going. And we've all got to play a part in it, is my point. We're all responsible for that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think about, I talk to a lot of kids, I talk to a lot of different schools, and I would say, you know, of all the classes, you might get two maybe that come up to me afterwards and are like, hey, how do I get involved in this? Or how do I get involved with that? And so much of life is just networking, you know, and if you don't go and talk to someone, introduce yourself, have those conversations, tell people what it is that you want to do, tell people your dreams. The more people that know your dreams, the more people that can help you along the road, you know, but there's this hesitation to communicate, to connect, to put yourself out there. And I think that's something that we need to find a way to change that, make young people feel comfortable doing that, or, you know, create environments where that can naturally develop more.
Yeah, I love that. And I think it's the most wonderful line to wrap up today's episode on. The more people who know your dreams, the more people who are there to help you. Phoebe Schechter, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your words of wisdom. We wish you all the best over the coming months, and look forward to seeing you back on our screens. But thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. This was such a pleasure.
Thank you for listening. Check us out at parentsinsport.co.uk.